This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
Just here walking around. We're gonna go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Get that one. Oh, you hit him. Go get that one, Henry. Right here.
Size of that deer.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. Hey, a little different intro this week. I just failed on a couple turkeys, some backyard birds. Put a pretty big stalk on a tom that was with some hens, and I think some jakes came to ruin the party. So, hey, it's middle of May. I got a soccer game I got to get to, which made me kind of push the issue a little more than I probably should have. But I almost got it. I feel like I was close. I was sub 100 yards from a nice tom. At least from what I can tell is a nice tom. Full strut. He dwarfed the other turkeys. It was fun though. Still fun. I ran across the field to remind myself how out of shape I am still. And could hear turkeys making noise, so I kind of like hung back and tried to call. And I'm assuming they might have been jakes. But then I finally moved forward because I had to I had to get going for a soccer game, but they definitely did something different than they usually do, and I think that's just because the foliage is all so thick right now. Like, where I usually see turkeys and how I've seen them work in these backyard birds work has been different in the past, and this is the second time I went after them, and they're going a different route because the open hardwoods, they're liking to stick to the open hardwoods, which I was on the, they could go left or right to open hardwoods, and I chose a smaller section of hardwoods, thought they'd cross through this little pinch point, and they sure didn't. They probably heard my call and were like, we got to get away from that guy. But I got a little rammy, snuck up over this little ridge and popped up and looked, and should have taken a couple extra minutes to do so, and boom, turkeys took off running. So there's a huge old oak tree or maple that's half rotten, half fallen over that I was pretty close to, and they kind of blocked my vision to the right. And there was a couple turkeys, I think two jakes and a hen, but I'm not sure. I'm not an expert. It's tough when they're running away. But yeah, I was close. So anyone listen to this, no matter how crazy you are about turkeys, I'm not a turkey hunter by any means. I almost got it done. But right now I'm just actually looping my way back to the house or back to the truck, however you want to look at it, and doing what I do a lot of times when I archery hunt. Walking back a little different, and I'm preparing mentally where I could potentially set up for Henry and me, or just me, and seeing what these turkeys just did gives me a little bit of hope to maybe get on one of these birds with Henry or myself. And I've never ground blind hunted turkeys before, but I feel pretty good about a couple potential ground blind pop-up spots, so taking advantage of the time I got out here and found some good spots, and I'm just walking back across this disc field. And I'm sure a lot of turkey guys probably understand the cycle of the turkey season better than me, but this area this year was completely void of turkeys until the farmers disc this field. It was they combined corn this past fall, and it was just big corn stubble until about a week ago. And I want to say the second or third evening after they did that is when me and Henry went after a tom. And I'm assuming he was with the same group of hens. I couldn't see the hens the first time. But there wasn't turkeys here, and now there's turkeys here. So talked to my buddy Robert a little bit, and he kind of explained the cycles of things a little bit and said, yeah, he's probably, the foliage is up and places are getting thicker and they're moving to different areas. So you're still got a turkey tag in your pocket. You never know where you might find turkey, I guess. So a lot of fun. Calling sucks, but toting a tripod and a camera and or two cameras, a little difficult, but hey, good time. So anyways, wanted to give shout out to the partners. DH3, Vitalized Seed. Here in a couple weeks, I'm going to plant a bunch of Nitro Boost. If you are interested in Nitro Boost and want to see my pretty face, hit me up. I got some Nitro Boost acre bags. I think I have a couple half acre bags too I could sell. Cheaper than on the website. Got some dealer pricing that Boys of Eli Seed pass on to all their dealers. So hit me up if you're interested. Get some savings. Also, with DH3, you should be thinking about mock scrapes if you have not been. Just trail cam locations with mock scrapes work great for me. Love using the synthetic deer sense that Kevin has over there at Deer Hunter Podcast. Great stuff. Wildlife Legends Taxidermy. Dude, if you shoot a turkey, like I almost did, and Henry's almost done, bring it to Wildlife Legends Taxidermy, man. They do some awesome turkey mounts. And to end this up, this week's podcast is with Grant Smits. Him and I met at the Deer Hunter Collective earlier this year in Mile, Michigan, at Saddle River Outfitters, and hit it off, and he loves traditional archery. So we hit it off really, really good right away, and I was like, yeah, we need to do a podcast about trad stuff. So it was a really good conversation, just kind of breaking down like the simplistic approach to, I mean, as simple as you can get with setting up a, you know, recurve. And Grant had some pretty good ideas and some really thoughtful information about what kind of bows to look for guys, you know, height of the recurve, type of recurve, draw weight, all that stuff, and just do like a basic set up, like, get your brace height right, make sure your string's right, knocking point's right. Talk about some arrow setups, just to kind of give a springboard for guys who are interested in trad. So I'm excited to dive into that rabbit hole more this year. I've been searching for a bow. Oh, and now I'm out of breath because I just walked across this disc field, reminding myself how out of shape I am while carrying a gun without a sling and a tripod with a heavy freaking camera on it. But hey, I'm getting out there. Make sure you guys do too. Hopefully enjoy this episode with Grant. Good stuff, buddy. Appreciate you hopping on, joining me. And don't forget to start shooting your bows, guys. Tack's coming up. 3D leagues are opening here in the month of May. Start tweaking with your setups right now. If you want to dive into more, you know, learning more about your bows, go to the pro shops right now. Ask some questions. Learn some stuff. Get stuff set up now. Don't wait till September. All right, enough preaching. You guys know what to do. Get out there this week. Enjoy this episode. See ya. Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild, coming to you from my pickup truck once again, doing a mobile podcast. And I have a gentleman on the other line here. He and I met kind of randomly at the Deer Hunter Collective down and over and up in Mile, Michigan at the South River Outfitters. Shoot, I don't know, almost 2 months ago now, it seems like. Time's just flying by. But you were there and you won a saddle, so saddle hunting is what got us kind of talking. But I got Grant Smith on. How's it going, dude?
Good. Glad you could have me on. I appreciate it.
Heck yeah, dude. Is it Smith or Smits?
Smits.
All right, Smits. Halfway there. Yep. I was halfway there.
Yep.
But yeah, you ended up winning a saddle, right?
Yeah, the Method 2. So, and I've tried it on, but I have not shot at it yet. We haven't had too many days up here that have been great weather, so I kind of was like, I'm gonna wait for a nice 70-80 degree day and get that thing rolling,
hang around. So you do live kind of up that way then?
Yep. I'm probably for a mile, I'm about 40 minutes, maybe 35. I'm in the Roscommon Grayling area.
Dude, what a beautiful area that is. I mean, there's a lot of trees knocked over right now, but man, driving up there is the first time I've been that area of the state in a long time. And I was like, oh, this is outdoorsman paradise kind of up here.
It really is. There's about as much state land as anywhere in Michigan. In Crawford County, it's actually 75% publicly owned land. So pretty crazy stat. Yeah, I heard that for the first time.
Do you find yourself, you know, traipsing around a lot of that stuff, or did you growing up?
I grew up on a dirt road and pretty much state land all around me, so that's kind of been the only thing I really know. Haven't been too into the private land hunting and stuff. I mean, we had a 10-acre piece that was kind of cool growing up around here, but yeah, haven't really had the need to hunt private when you get all this public.
Yeah, so you don't even know any different. It's like, I'm trying to, really, my next place I live, I want to kind of be, you know, ideally have a little bit of property where I live, but I'm actually kind of like looking at like what's in proximity from like a state land perspective, just because opportunity to run dogs, opportunity to scout, opportunity to just do more and just kind of be like more conveniently located to more than one option. It's kind of like actually something I've been thinking about. And I never really thought I'd ever make that a priority of mine. So, but we kind of hit it off because you won the saddle and then someone was like,
you were asking some questions because you use traditional archery, and someone's like, I think Nate does that. And I like, and by no means am I like a pro, but I've been dabbling with traditional archery my whole life pretty much. And I have used a saddle a couple times. So we started talking about that, and it was apparent very quick on in our conversation that you are pretty tore up with hunting with a trad bow.
Yeah. It's just kind of something I've picked up the last, a few years, seriously. Kind of when I got out of college, I was looking for another hobby. And I was like, what'll take up my time in the, hunting world? Cause that's what I like to do. And I thought there's no better way than going down the rabbit hole of shooting a trad bow too. And my dad's done that for quite a few years. So,
yeah. So, and you were a college athlete, right?
I played baseball. Yep, at Aquinas.
So you're kind of like that
Grand Rapids.
That like itch, to that competitive drive was still there. You don't have sports no more. Because I mean, I know a couple people who play college baseball, and it takes up a lot of your time. Like this is a 24/7 kind of ordeal. And so you're just like, man, I gotta do something. I'm still feeling it. I want to compete. And you're like, you know what? Traditional archery. This is my energy is gonna divert over to here.
Yep. And I really don't even think it was necessarily a compete thing. I think it was more of how could I make up for all this time that I now have.
Yes.
So yes, it was one of those things that I thought that I was a good option. And I also had. I know some guys are probably gonna laugh, but I used to shoot a compound quite a bit, and I just kind of didn't quite enjoy shooting my bow as much anymore. That was kind of some of the reason. It wasn't because I got good at it by any means. I just, I lost some of the drive to shoot, and I was like, I'm gonna try that out. And then once I did that, it's like, oh man.
Oh, so I think so many guys can relate to that because. That's why I still shoot trad occasionally, because it's so different than the compound life and fun. Like something about makes it feel like that 4 or 5 year old kid when I hit a pizza box for the first time with an arrow, like that feeling I get. It's like every time I hit the target or shoot a good group, I get that little kid, that joy of with a trad bow. And then, when you shoot a compound, like the expectation these days is just like precision is so high, right?
Oh yeah. That's something that's sometimes it's almost like it could seem not as relaxing. So like I'm in an indoor league here in Grayling at Northwoods Archery. Okay. And it's at Hanson Hills, a ski area. And the compound guys in there, they're some pretty dang good shooters in there. And I mean, they're just drilling that bullseye over and over and over. And then if they miss one, it's kind of like, oh. And I'm like, man, that is so much pressure, And with trad, I can yank a shot and not care. I can yank plenty of them.
Correct. It's a whole different.
That's how it goes. Yeah, so it's pretty laid back, which is the part I like about it.
And I think that's if you find, and I think anyone who thinks about, like, if the first time you picked up a bow to shoot, it was fun. Like, man, it was, even if it was with a group of buddies or if, I grew up shooting a bow, I just always did it because it was fun. And I know, it was probably, close to a decade ago, I was kind of going through some stuff with, like, my archery shot and my bow got stolen and I my compound did. And I was like, it was kind of in November when it got stolen. So I was like, well, I don't have the funds to buy a new bow right now. I'm just going to use this recurve I have. And that was probably one of my funnest years, hunting. It was a whole different thing. And I didn't kill anything with it, but I had a lot of fun. I was toting the bow in late season, which up until that point, I didn't really do very much late season archery hunting. I kind of was, maybe pick and choose here and there. But I was like, in December, deep into December, like pulling that recurve out, trying to kill a deer, and it was just like that joy was back. And I think that's why I love it so much. And it's a challenge unlike a lot of other things, because for me, I want to shoot really good. So when I pull out the trad bow, I'm like, okay, I got to be like consistent here. And it's like a thing I can like work towards. Like, all right, I got to shoot, you know, I kind of, and I like, I'm shooting today because I'm going to try to get better today. And in the compound life, it's kind of like, I just shoot all the time just because I can shoot all the time. And like my definition of being like proficient with that is like a whole other mindset and checklist. And it, like you said, it gets a little more serious and like, you can make a great 50-yard shot, but if you miss by 2 inches, it's like you feel like you missed like a mile, you know?
Yeah.
It's different. So did you, like, you talked about your dad shot traditional archery. Did you, like, did you grow up while he was shooting trad, or has he been doing this for, like, a really long time, or did he kind of, like, transition to that later in life?
No, honestly, I mean, as a kid, you know, he gave us recurves and stuff, but he shot compound. And he kind of hunting on his own, honestly. My grandpa, he, you know, would take him out hunting once in a while as a little kid and stuff. But once he got older, kind of into his 20s, I'm pretty sure, is when he's like, oh, this is pretty fun. And then he kind of learned from, you know, from nothing, you know, up here on state land and stuff. After... I'm not sure on the timeline, but after a while, he was like, you know, I kind of want to shoot a trad bow, because he just like, you know, not liking my compound as much as I used to, just from like a practice standpoint. And I'm pretty sure that's why he switched. I may be slightly wrong on that. I don't know.
But from like you're saying, because like I was like heavily influenced by my dad growing up, because he always archery hunted and loved it, but he struggled. Like he'll, if we ever get him on, I do want to talk about like his struggles. Like when I was like a little kid, he really like, I think it was a mixture of target panic or something, but he grew up shooting. Like when he learned how to shoot a bow, it was instinctive. And then he got a compound. He shot a compound for years with no sights, fingers. You know, shot it instinctively, and he talked about how well he shot. And then he had like an injury when I think either I was born or right before I was born, playing softball or something. He hurt his shoulder pretty bad. And then he kind of talked, I just remember him talking about that's when he threw a sight on his bow, and that's when, you know, he got a release and a peep sight and did all these things. And I just remember him shooting in the backyard. And, you know, kind of being always kind of frustrated. And then it was really, he missed a lot of deer, and just something, the moment of truth wasn't that good. So then when I like started, like, I think when I was like 13 or 14 years old, he gave me his compound. I was big enough that I could pull back 60 pounds or whatever. And then he went recurve, and he shot that recurve for, I don't know how long, quite a long time, up until probably maybe 3 years ago. No, 5 years ago, he bought a compound to kind of supplement his out-of-state hunts. But it was so, like, for me, I was always hearing these stories of my dad shooting instinctively. So when he shot, when I learned how to shoot instinctively. Like, that was what I used. They didn't have kid compound bows, nice, really, when I was a kid. So my first compound was, I have it still, has, you know, kitty whiskers on it. I shot it fingers, no peep sight with one pin. Like, that's like what I used up until I was like 14 years old. So
that's awesome.
And then I went to a release, and then I went to a peep sight, and I was like, oh, I'm deadly now. I can really shoot good groups now, you know, but I have that background of, you know, shoot instinctively.
Yep.
But
yeah, there's,
it's fun.
You know, and there's a lot of different shooting styles. We could get to that at some point.
Uh-huh.
That's another thing. So,
before we definitely want to dive in some tactics, because just when I picked your brain, it was like you brought a lot of things to light for me that I didn't even know about. Because when you say you got interest in this, it's, I feel like you've went down some pretty big rabbit holes and educated yourself on a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I definitely did. So it's probably, maybe 3-4 years ago, I had a surgery actually from baseball. So I couldn't even hunt with my bow for the entire year.
Oh.
And that was kind of when I was shooting my first trad bow that my dad got me. And it's actually the bow that I still use today. I actually went back to it, and that's what I've been shooting. I just got different limbs on it since it's a takedown.
We first called, you got a new string in for it too, right, today?
Yep, got another string. I was in need of a backup, so just in case.
Cool.
So
Oh, dude, I love this stuff, man. It's May 16th or whatever, and we're getting prepared for the fall already. I love it. It's great. Yep. So, break down that bow. I kind of, because I like hearing guys talk about what they got. So, what is your current bow that you're shooting?
So, I'm shooting a Martin Hatfield takedown. It's a three-piece. The limbs literally just, they have bolts attaching them to the riser. And for anyone who doesn't know what a riser is, the riser is literally where the limbs attach to. So it's like the main part of the recurve. That's what it is. But it's probably a 20-year-old bow, I would say. But I mean, it shoots great and it works just fine. So it was a higher end when it was made. You know, recurve, but
how tall is it and what's mounted?
Yeah, so dimensions and everything, it's a 62-inch bow. It says 50 pounds at 28, it's really like 53 pounds. But yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of a beefier, it doesn't have a ton of weight, but it's definitely a bigger style recurve. And then I always keep my quiver attached to it. I'm running a Great Northern quiver, and that just wraps his rubber straps, and it wraps right around the riser, gears itself on there. And then as far as arrows and stuff, I use gold tip traditional arrows. They're just solid arrow for me, and they're the first ones I shot. And I've tried a bunch of different arrows just from seeing them and being at a bunch of trad events, but I just can't go away from these because they just don't break on me much when I miss. So
that's good. Durability is key.
Yep, durability and consistency. So then, as far as my arrow setup, I like to just mess around and I put on a 7-inch wrap on my arrow, and then I pair it with either turkey fletchings or just synthetic feathers. So that normally I like the barred feathers, synthetic ones, just for the looks. So and then one of the fun things, so it's a 400 spine arrow, and I have, this is kind of like the rabbit hole of trad, is finding out the spine and all the weight up front, what your bow likes, all that stuff. But I have a 100 grain insert. And then I have a 50 grain adapter that screws into the back of that insert. And then I have a 125 grain broadhead. And I did that heavy insert and adapter so that way I can have a 125 grain broadhead and save money. So that's kind of a nice thing.
And a lot more options.
Sorry.
You have a lot more broadhead options too at 125 grains.
Yep, so that arrow ends up being right around 600 to 610 grains. That's total arrow.
And throughout this episode, I do want to kind of get into how to find that arrow. And there's a lot of different ways to get it and, kind of break down how you did that. Because I, myself included, and a couple of buddies, that's like stuff we always talk about. Like how to, I think a lot of guys are understanding how to tune compounds, tune them and then find match arrows and weights and stuff. But there's not as much information out there. Maybe the information's out there, but we just haven't heard it as much as some of the compound stuff. So I do want to get into that. But I do, before we do that, I want to kind of like, what's your shooting style? And is that something that you've tweaked over the years, or have you kind of stayed into a certain shooting style for a long time?
So I did tweak mine. So when I first started, I shot like my dad did, which was three fingers under the arrow. And I used a tab though. So that's, if guys know that, I don't know if guys know what that is, but
I think some guys are, a lot of guys could. I mean, yeah, like I think it's, I always looked at it as it's essentially something that you use to like protect your fingers. Like I grew up shooting a glove, but it's just a tab. And I think that style, the three under with a tab, is like a very common or popular way to shoot right now. I feel like.
Yep. And And that's kind of why I did it. I was, you know, reading stuff, and I was like, oh, tab, you know, normally you have a clean and release and stuff like that. And three under, I guess that's just what a lot of guys are shooting kind of now. But that's how I started, though, was a tab and three under, and I shot like that. And then actually it was last year, I was like, you know, I kind of want to get more into this glove thing again. And I kind of want to go to split, because I was having some, I wasn't having trouble shooting, but I was having a little bit of like, it was a little hard on me mentally to have my arrow closer to where I was shooting. And I switched to split finger. So my arrow would actually be pretty far away from what I wanted to hit. And that kind of took away the mind games for me if they did pop up.
And about like your point of your arrow was kind of clouding your sight picture being three out there.
Yeah, and I didn't really use that. It was more of a sight picture when I had three under. And now that I'm shooting split finger, I kind of drip it a little more towards snap shooting. I wouldn't say I'm quite a snap shooter, because I like to settle just a little bit before I release. But switching to split, my arrow's like, I mean, it's very noticeable. If you were to talk to someone that shot three under, then they switched to split and they drew back, their arrow's not close.
Yeah.
Not even close to really.
Yes, I can see it. I can say that from the other way, because I've always shot split finger, and I use the anchor as the fletching in my lip. You know, we'll talk about this too, because this is one of the discussions me and you had. I shot someone else's bow last year. He's like, hey, I got one of these bows. You're more than welcome to shoot it for a little bit, say like it. And I was trying to shoot it split finger, but the way the knocking point, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like the knocking point's a little different if you shoot three under versus split. So it was shooting his arrows really bad. So I was like, well, I'll just try this three under. Everyone's talking about it. Hated that. Hated having that arrow in my sight picture. Absolutely drove me bonkers. So like, it's a preference thing, right? Like some guys don't care, but like that for me, I was like, I never have shot this way. I've always done the split finger thing. And man, that was, I was like, nope, I don't like this at all.
Yeah. And I mean, it worked. I shot my first deer, three under. So, I mean, it worked, but I just feel way more comfortable though, when it comes down to the time to shoot one, you know, shooting split finger, not when all you have to do is just trust all your practice, draw back, you know, look at what you want to hit and shoot it. It's kind of, you know, sounds simple, but it's
the art of it.
In my mind, it feels simpler. Yeah.
That's why I love it so much. That's like the art of archery. It's like throwing the perfect spiral, or, you know, you play baseball, like just instinctively knowing how to hit your mark, you know, like that's what's so cool about that. So yeah, this is kind of how our conversation kind of started when we met for the first time. We're like talking, and then you know, I kind of explained to you how I was, you know, struggling with some of my stuff, like, you know, what was working in the yard was working really well for me. And then once I was, you know, an animal in front of me, I was shooting really high. And you instantly were like, where's your anchor? And I, you know, started talking to you about my anchor. And you brought up some really, really good points. And so then we start talking about something different. So why don't we kind of dive into that anchor point a little bit, because you talked about it and then we went and shot in the parking lot, and I can tell you my perspective of it, but kind of break down like this anchor point you like to do being a split finger.
Yeah. So basically when I draw back, well, I'll before the anchor, I want to make it clear. So one of the first things that most guys do is immediately look at, okay, or they feel, where's their grip on their bow? I mean, you got to have a consistent grip on your bow to start. Before you even think about shooting, you got to make sure that grip is where you want it. And typically, when you're shooting a recurve, it's not that much different than a compound. Long bows, that's a different thing. Some of those styles, you kind of got to, like, not depth grip it, but you got to be pretty firm on there. But recurves, though, like the one I'm shooting, basically I have that resting right in the kind of, basically where you went with the compound. If you're pulling the compound back, you want that compound going up against, like, the inside of your thumb and right in that kind of crease of your palm.
Yeah.
And then the rest of your fingers, what you want to do is you want to wrap them around the kind of towards the front of the grip, and you want those fingers to basically have just enough pressure to where you have enough grip on the bow, but to where, you know, you're not death gripping it either, I guess, if that makes sense. So just light tension on the front of the grip, or the other side of it with your fingertips. One guy told me, he said it's like an egg. Don't press too hard or you're going to break the egg. So I don't know if that's a good analogy.
No, I love that because I actually, it's funny you say, I just watched I got down an Archer YouTube train the other day and, you know, discussing bow hand and, you know, what I was, the guy explained, he's like, think of how a compound is set up, like the riser versus the limbs. Like when that bow goes off, it's actually pulling the riser towards you. So you're not going to drop it. And a recurve is similar too, right? Like the way the limbs bend on a recurve compared to a longbow, very similar characteristic, right? So you don't need to have that thing like, you know, you're not shaking your girlfriend's dad's hand for the first time. You don't need to do a grip like that. You know, you can just, you just hold it. So, and I have struggled with that with the recurve. Like I will grab that thing and be like, oh yeah, I got to hold on to this. And Judas, do I torque the bow when I do that? Like, whoa, yep. Like it's bad.
Yep. So that's something just, I mean, that's one of the first things to consider, I think, when you're shooting a bow, because you're going to end up changing your anchors too. When you first start out, you're not going to know. You're going to have zero clue on what you're going to actually like. And it's only going to, basically the way to solve that is to shoot a lot of arrows. Mm-hmm. So the more arrows you shoot, the more you mess around trying to find what anchors will work for you. That's where you go. But anyway, to the anchors though. So when I'm drawing back, I set my grip, get my bow up. And when I draw, I try and draw my middle finger right to the corner of my mouth. And then as a second anchor, I keep pulling. And then when I hit my index finger on the bottom part of my cheekbone, like where it's in a pocket, that's the release. So that's when I'm letting it go.
Do you like that better than me burying the fletching of my cheek?
Well, the fletching of the cheek's okay. It's just that it's a consistency thing. So based on where you're, but you kind of want more than one anchor point. I mean, everyone's different though. So everyone's facial geometry is different. So that's one of the things with the trad bow that people need to consider. Not everyone's anchor points are going to be the same. Everyone's facial geometry is different. So what might be my anchor points on my face might work on someone, but then might not even be close, you know, to the right anchors for someone else. So like, for instance, my dad, he actually, when he gets the full draw, he's got two anchor points, and then his string actually is barely touching his nose. I cannot, for the life of me, get myself to get my nose to touch the string. I don't even know how it's possible. So that's just like the facial geometry thing where you just got to try and figure out points on your face that might not move, I guess. So like a tooth you were talking about, I believe, is that?
Yeah, we talked about a tooth because that's what you said. Because I asked you, because I was like, I've never heard of it broke down that way. But that makes sense. Like, because I was shooting really high at animals. Like both shots I took this last fall, I was super confident when I pulled the bow back. The first one, I hit my cheek, but I hit my lip, you know, but I didn't hit it with the fletching all the way. So I was like, so then I really focused on it. The doe came, I had a shot of doe, you know, 2 weeks later or 10 days later. And I made the mental note and I had a camera rolling. So I was able to watch myself do it. And man, I buried that fletching right in my side of my mouth, like I like to do. And I let her go. And man, I shot, you know, a foot high at like 20 yards. And I was like, what the heck was that? And, but then you broke that down and I was like, you know what? I'm not even thinking about anything else. It's like my body is fletching touches that part of my cheek or my lip. And it's like shot is engaged. Right. And you told me that. And I was like, oh my gosh, like that's awesome because it will slow that moment down for me. And then I can have that, that extra, you know, it's no different than when I pull my compound back. Like, hey, I hit my anchor, my hand on my, you know, my hand hits my jaw. Like, that's my point. I think you maybe asked me that. You're like, what do you do with your compound? I was like, well, when my hand hits my jaw right here, I know I'm good. And when I touch the string on my nose or I center my peep sight up, like, I have those two things or three things. And you're like, why has it got to be different for a recurve? And I was like, that makes all the sense.
Yep. Yeah, so I mean, basically just shoot for two anchor points, and I wish I had, you know, more of an idea of what other guys use for anchor points. It's kind of been interesting. I don't really ask guys too much on that, to be honest, but I just kind of hear, you might see someone on YouTube or something, like, sometimes guys will, like, put their thumb behind their jawbone, or like the pocket in between their thumb and their index finger.
Yep.
At like you there, they'll like put that in the back of their jaw, and then they'll adjust with their fingers on their other anchor points towards the front of their mouth. Yeah. So they'll have like a stationary kind of draw, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So if you're snap shooting, or, you know, not holding your jaw for a while, that's probably not going to work.
Correct.
But,
yes. But so yeah, when we were talking about it, like, the thing I liked was, you know, middle finger is hitting my normal anchor point where my fletching is, but that's where my middle finger will start. And then that pointer finger, you know, you have a lot of cheek right bone that's pretty consistent. And like you said, there's a little spot right there that just naturally I like to feel, and that would just begin my follow through shot, you know, my pull through shot. And I haven't shot yet because I'm trying to get a lighter poundage bow, but I can tell you what, there's been a lot of times where people are watching me like, what the heck is he doing? And I'm just like, I'm just doing it, right? Like, I'm just putting my hand where I need it and just feeling it. It's like, ooh, I like the feeling of that. And it's really not that far off for the part of my face that I put my index, you know, when I shoot a thumb button, my pointer finger is what lays against my face. And I hit about that, almost that exact same spot, a little farther back, obviously, but it's still a similar concept. So I think the transition for guys, if you shoot compound, it's going to be pretty easy. You got to figure your anchors. You can't just go out there and just fling arrows without like a purpose.
Yep. And so one thing I wanted to include about that, kind of with the anchors, is a lot of guys, when they first start, it's very easy to pull like right to your face. So a lot of guys are like pulling like to that corner of the mouth instead of, how do I explain it? So like, say the front of your fingers, you grab the string, and the front of your fingers are kind of, you kind of pull the bow back, and they press kind of up against, like, say your canine or something like that. That's too far in front of your face. You want to be almost around. So like your anchor points, generally, it's going to be the end of your fingers are going to be actually touching your anchor point, not your, you know, inside of your finger. That makes sense. So generally when you want that outside of your finger, the like where your nails are, your nail tips, that's kind of where you want to actually touch your anchor, if that makes sense.
And I'm assuming that's because when the release happens, you're able to have your hand go straight back opposed to trying to go around your face.
When you and that'll keep you from what a lot of guys talk about is short drawn. So that's something that happens to a lot of guys that start. They might be overbowed or something along those lines. Like they don't pull it, you know, that correctly. And it just takes time, though.
So. Uh-huh. All right. So yep. I'm going to give you some credit here. So here we are. We're meeting each other. We're talking about all this stuff. And we're like, I was like, you got to show me. And like, I need to see this visual, because I'm a visual guy. So you walk over to your truck, you know, and, you know, you grab this, your target out of the back of your truck, and you got your trad bow. Like, you're all set up. I freaking love it. You got your stuff with you. It's awesome. And you whip your target out there. I don't know how far it was. You didn't care. And here you are talking through your process, and I'm just watching you. And you shot 5 arrows. And, dude, you shot a freaking awesome group. I was like, okay. Like, not only are you, like, it's you, you're there's, it's really hard because as guys who are passionate or like interested in something, you can educate yourself and you watch all these videos and you're like, man, I really like it. But there's also that point where it's like, that's good, but you actually have to go in the field and do these things. And like, you are talking me through this and like seeing it and it's making sense. And then you go shoot that group. And I was like, okay, like you just validate yourself right there. And I think that is, that's just a testament. Like, dude, you've shot a lot. Like this doesn't just happen overnight. Like there's a commitment that guys got to realize is out there. Like, yeah, you, my dad, you know, he can grab his recurve and shoot that thing freaking awesome at 20 yards. Guarantee it. Like if we cold one shot, he'd smoke me. Cause he just has been doing it forever. But yeah, if you want to get proficient at something and do that, like it takes work. But if you have a direction, I mean, the proof's in the pudding. I saw it. Like, I was like, oh, dang, dude, this dude just switched this all up and just ripped a group like that. Like, whoa. So it's achievable, right? Like, it's, and I think that's what's kind of encouraged. Same thing, you go to the driving range when you're golfing. Like, you might suck at golf, but I guarantee you, if you go hit a bunch of buckets of balls and take some training and do some research and attempt it, you probably be able to hit a little farther, a little straighter, like, eventually. But you got to put the work in.
Yep. Yep, and it takes a while. I'm not gonna say people can't pick up their bow this summer and shoot, you know, 5-6 days a week and be ready for hunt season. They can do that 100%. But it's the initial start of shooting is kind of tough to, because you're trying to understand how your body moves, how you need to position yourself, and just getting familiar with the bow itself too, and the arrows, because that's a big thing. Like I try and shoot the same bow. So like before hunting season, I'm not going to be touching any of my other bows and messing around. Like it's going to be that bow and that's it. Like nothing else.
Kill mode, man. So, you're in kill mode.
Yep. Yeah.
So, nope. Okay. All right. Well, I like that. I just wanted to give you a little bit of praise because that impressed me. Yeah. And especially being able to walk through, not only was the shooting really good, but like having you be able to explain what was going on, I feel like really shortened the learning curve for me for when I do start shooting. Cause like we've been talking back and forth, like I just got to pull a trigger on a bow because mine's just too much. But let's kind of like transition this conversation to like guys who, if they have a bow, you can even like pick on me here a little bit. Maybe they got a bow that's too much bow. And when you say that term gets thrown out there a little bit, what to you, what does it mean when you're overbowed?
Well, you're going to know. You're going to know mainly. That's one of the things about tread. You got to be very honest with yourself. whether it comes to the shot you're about to take on a deer, like, am I ready for the, like, Is this something I should be doing? Or, you know, you got to be honest with yourself and just look at it, you know, and how it is. And I played baseball and I pitched, so it was those muscles I've been trained my whole life. So like a 50-pound bow for me is, you know, it's just fine. It's comfortable. You know, I don't want more. I don't want any less. It's good for me right now. But yeah, for a lot of guys though, I mean, being overbowed, it really depends on the guy. It really does. I would recommend getting, you know, probably a bow in the 40s. If you're, you know, a fit guy, you know, you're in shape, you're in your 20s, you know, 30s or whatever, I'd get a bow, you know, 45 pounds or something. I don't think that's a problem. Then you just got to shoot. You got to shoot, and you'll end up training your muscles, and it'll be, I guarantee it.
Be like me who bought a bow when I was in my early 20s and I was like, I'm great. And then, you know, put some wear and tear on the body. And it's like, I'm not good no more. I can't do it. And that sucks. Like, to be honest, like for me, yo, being a guy that's always shot a 70 plus pound bow, you know, to like have this recurve that sits there, that's, you know, 50 some pounds at 28, but I draw, you know, 30 or 30 and a half inches. I mean, that's what my compounds are at. And then to have this be like, that was my problem last year. Like, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to let this bow be my problem anymore. Like, I can train, I can do push-ups, I can do whatever, and I'm going to shoot more. Dude, I did great until it wasn't good, and then the wheels kind of fell off a little bit. So, like you said, you got to be honest with yourself, and I had to come to the conclusion that this bow is just too much for me. And, man, dude, I have... I told you this the other day, like, I've been, like, working out consistently, like, for me, like, right, it's not like I'm crazy, but, like, once a week I'm focusing on weight training and doing those things, and, like, I've had crazy improvements with my overall shoulder pain. Like, I don't have the pain like I was having, just everyday pain, you know, and a couple times I've, my recurve's just sitting down in the office, right, right, podcast, right, right, do my work, and I pull that thing off the rack, and I go pull that thing back, and dude, the pain is like instant. Like once I hit that where I'm supposed to be, you know, it just stacks up too much. And it's like, you know, this is just, I got to stop trying to convince myself I can do it. I got to, you know, go back here. And, I took your recommendations. I shot a lot of different bows and some other guys too, like Jeremy Tilley, shout out to him. We've talked too about trad stuff. And I went to the traditional bow hunter expo or traditional whatever that is in Kalamazoo. And I shot a pile of bows. And it was very apparent that there was pain and with certain bows. There was and all those bows around that 40-pound mark that didn't stack up quick. It was smooth. And, you know, that's what guys got to do. You got to find that bow that works for you and make sure it's the right thing. And don't be you don't need to be a macho, you know, macho man. He's like, you just got to be comfy because you got to put the reps in.
Yep. And don't get me wrong, a 40 pound bow with a sharp broadhead and the right arrow set up, I mean, you could pass through deer. I mean, you could pass through deer very, very easily with 40 pounds. They're so, I was just saying 45 pounds is more of like a, you know, kind of like a standard, like, hey, this is probably attainable for, you know, most guys, pretty, you know. There's a lot of guys that shoot 50 too.
Yeah, and to be honest, I shot some 45-pound bows that were a little on the higher end. So, like, when I went over that 20-inch draw, like, it's called stacking, right, when it stacks at the end. They were way different than other, like, not all 45 pound bows are created equal. So you kind of got to find that sweet spot too. But dude, this is probably the problem. The next time I get a paycheck, I'm going to go probably buy one, but you don't have to spend a bunch of money to get started in trad bow. So I kind of want you to kind of go to how you talk to me, like, cause I was asking, I was like, hey, well, how much money do you think is like this ballpark to start? So like, maybe kind of throw some numbers out there, obviously generalizations here, but I mean, what guys should be looking for, like, you know, we kind of discussed poundage, like 40, 45, and what's the height? The one other thing too we talked about was like overall height of the recurve. Like what's kind of a good like inches for that to shoot for?
Yeah, so this is one of the things that I learned, which it's probably one of the best things. So with traditional bows, you do not need to spend a lot of money. I mean, it's as far as getting a bow, you can get a hunt ready bow for fairly cheap. So I got a couple buddies, full setups, bow, arrows, you know, I'll read a list off. I actually wrote one down so I didn't miss anything for anyone that wants to get a bow. Like all the stuff they need and they're done. I got couple buddies into that, and they got setups like with the bow that they can kill a deer with, and it's going to be reliable for around $500, $600, $700, right in that range for everything. The bow themselves, though, my one friend's bow, it's cost $200 used, and my buddy's dad, not the same bow but that exact model, he actually shot an elk out west with that same bow, and my buddy now has that bow 20 years later for $200, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So it's proven. So with my other buddy, he probably got his for around 250, maybe 200. I don't remember exactly, but to say if you want to get a, you know, used hunting bow for $200-$300, I mean, you can definitely get it. I wrote down a list as far as like, just so I had an idea of what to talk about.
Yeah.
As far as the brands that I would recommend. So most people know Bear Archery. So I'm kind of near Grayling here. So home of Fred Bear. So I gotta give them some credit here. But their bows, as far as used bows go, are so reliable for how old they are. There's so many collectors out there and stuff, but some of the models that I have shot and that, you know, a lot of guys shoot that are used are like the Bear Kodiak, Bear Super Kodiak, the Bear Grizzly, and those are all kind of recurves on the, you know, beefier style. They're a little bit heavier. The Grizzly's not quite as much, but the other ones are. And when I say heavy, they're light compared to a compound. Hmm. But I'm more talking about like the actual mass in the riser. You're going to get a thicker riser, and that's most of the time going to mean it's more forgiving.
Okay.
There's high-end bows that don't have a ton of mass in the riser that are going to be better than, you know, others, but that's just a general assumption when you're trying to pick out a bow. And for most guys, so I'm 6'1". I don't have a super long draw, like right at the standard 28 inches, which is what you see all recurves and longbows. That's what their weights are set at. That's like the industry standard is. So if a bow is 50 pounds, it's 50 pounds at 28 inches. So that's like a typical assumption. As far as the length on these bows, I would shoot, if someone's trying to get a bow for the first time and their draw is anywhere between 26 to 30 inches, I would definitely say get a 60 to 62 inch bow. I mean, you could have a 31, 32 inch draw and still shoot a 62 inch bow just fine. But I'm basically talking about, you know, your average used bow. Like, what are those going to, what should those dimensions be? That'll probably make it safe for you to buy. That's just kind of...
Well, that's great. That helps me out a lot because I will scour, you know, some of the Facebook pages or you go to these expos and they got a lot of used bows and it can almost be overwhelming. But if you know, like, hey, when you pick this thing up, like I around $300, I should be able to get something that's good. And it's in these dimensions. Like, that's a great starting point for a lot of people.
Yeah, and like the bow I currently shoot now, I've had a Great Northern recurve. I got my first deer with that, and that guy sells his for around 1,000 new. I had a Great Northern Ghost, 54 at 28, I think. Yeah, 54 at 28. But then my bow I shoot now, I mean, that one, you could probably find it used. They're hard to find. But if you do find them used, you could probably find mine for around 300 bucks.
So, you got options for a bow, and then what? The next question everyone asks is like, what arrows? Like, how do I get arrows figured out?
Well, arrows. This is kind of something where you're going to have to play with it. There's different routes you can go, but this is the aspect where you can get the bow for cheap, but now the accessories and stuff, that's where you kind of got to play around and waste a bit of money, if I'm being honest. So the arrows, you talk to most guys, arrows are probably going to be, especially if you shoot a lot, they have the potential to be the most expensive thing, especially if you're buying a bunch of different bows, because you're going to need a lot of different arrows. They're all going to be different. But I'm going to break it down into, like, arrow spines. So typically, guys will have, I'm going to base this off of hunting arrows and, not like target shooting or anything like that. I'm talking like a hunting bow setup right now. So say you get a 40-pound recurve, right, or 45, right in that range. You're going to be a 500 spine, arrow typically. As far as if you're doing a 500 spine arrow and you want to be in that 500 to 600, grain arrow weight, that's the spine. So if you're getting a 40 pound bow, I would recommend that. However, it wouldn't be a bad thing to just go ahead and go online at like Three Rivers Archery or Lancaster Archery and get an arrow spine, like what do they call it? Like a pack. And what they do is they send you a bunch of different spined arrows in the ones that you want. So say you want a gold tip arrow, gold tip traditional arrow like mine, you can go on there and you can buy a arrow spine pack, or what do they call it? Arrow shaft tube pack. That's probably it.
Okay.
And you would get like arrows from, I think it, 350 to maybe even 700, or 350 to 600, something like that. So you'd have the whole range. And then what you can do is take that and try and tune your bow. So that's another thing I got to talk about.
I say tune in
heart, but
yes.
That's a rabbit hole. Trying to summarize stuff, you know, but there's so many ways I could go right now.
Yes, I can kind of help you direct this just from going off my experience and like what I've had questions myself. When you get a used bow, you got to check the brace height. So why don't you quick give us a little rundown on brace height? And I just had this with my buddy, he Robert McIntyre, shout out to him. He's been shooting a strat, man. He's been shooting great. Got a new string for his bow, and we are on the phone because we talk all the time. And he's like, I'm like, you got to look at your brace height. He's like, WTF, what does that mean? And I'm like, I was like, this happened to me years ago. I shot like crap, couldn't figure it out. And I had a guy, old boy, tell me this, and it made all the difference. So why don't you kind of talk about how to, like, what brace height is and how to, like, measure that and how you get it to the correct brace height. Because it's pretty easy to do once you understand it.
Yeah. So here, I'll do it from, like, a start to finish. Okay, you get your bow. We'll say it's, let's just go with the 50. I'll use my bow. That's probably the easiest. So you get a 50-pound bow. You get a 400 spine arrow. And what you do from there is you're going to shoot this arrow with this bow, with the bear shaft, no feathers on it. But first, what you're going to do is you're going to have your bowstring. So you might be lucky and get a decent bowstring with the bow that you buy. It might, or it'll be bad. But so what you do is you look up, you know, say I don't have one. Look up online that you can go on Three Rivers. You can go on these Facebook trad groups. Guys will sell strings they make that are great. Just kind of, I'd buy one from a reputable source. But you buy the bow string. So say it's 62-inch bow. You buy a 62-inch string, but it's really going to be like, say, 58 inches. So that's a weird thing. So pay attention to that. So my string's really 58 inches long, but it's for a 62-inch bow. So just kind of look up your specs on that. So you have your string, and then you have your silencers. And for the silencers, I could get into talking about how to put that on, but basically I'd look up a YouTube video on that. I put a couple puffballs on there or whatever for some silencers. So now you string your bow, and what you do is you have a bow square, something I was going to list that you need to buy. And what you do is you attach it to your string, and you run that to the deepest part of the grip on your bow. So your brace height is measured from the deepest part of the grip on your bow to the string. So
where your hand touches the grip, like where your hand would touch the grip, farthest away from the string.
Yep, exactly. That's your brace height. So a lot of guys, like that I've seen too, they'll get into shooting and I'll be like, oh, your brace height's really low. And they'll be like, what's that?
Yep.
Like that's there's so many things that you can just mess up when you start shooting trad, but if you have an idea on brace height and knocking point, you're going to be okay.
Uh-huh.
So brace height, a lot of bows are different on the brace height, what they recommend, but you'd be pretty safe with most bows having like an 8-inch brace height. Like if you didn't know what to do and you had an 8-inch brace height, it'd be okay. But if you were really worried, I'd just go look up, you know, that bow online and just see, say, recommended brace height, and it'll give you a range. So the brace height, I like to have mine on the higher side of what my bow allows, because it's going to be more forgiving, and I really don't care about the speed on my bow. It's already slow. That's like not a big deal.
Let's say you have a 6-inch brace height, but you're shooting for 8. How do I get to 8 inches?
So what you would do is, I have a stringer. Some guys will do the old bend the bow down on the ground and pull the string off the top. I have a stringer. It just scares me. I'm gonna snap a limb or something, even though I'm probably not, but I would just buy a $10 stringer, you know, whatever. So I unstring the bow. I see that it was 6 inches. And what I do is I take the string off the top limb or one of the limbs, keep it on the other one, and I twist it. I always mess this up, but I'm pretty sure twist it towards me. So both sides of the string bow. So you're going to have your serving on the string. You're going to go on the top part of the string, the bottom, and you're going to twist that towards you. Give it, I don't know, say 10 twists if it's that far. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that string back on the top limb, put my stringer on, string it, and then I'm going to recheck my brace height, and then I'm going to say, like, no, it's 7 inches. Okay, now I got to redo it. So with the fact that, in this example, we're using a new bowstring, okay, there's fast flight bowstrings, a lot of the newer bows, cheap fast flight strings, and then there's just the typical Dacron or B50 strings, and those are just your typical bowstring. Well, the B50 and Dacron strings, those will definitely stretch. So if you have a B50 or Dacron string, you're going to have to keep an eye on your brace height, especially when you first start shooting, because it's going to stretch a lot. Like, you might even see that just stretch it quickly, just from having it struck. So with fast flight, normally it stops at some point. You might get a little bit over time, but it's so much. It's not a huge deal. So pay attention to your string and your brace height. So say we got 8 inches now. We're good to go. Now we're going to the knocking point. So what you're going to do is you're going to have your bow square now on your rest. So you're going to put the bow square, and a lot of them come with like a fake arrow, kind of, or just, you know, or I guess, but mine is like a fake arrow. So I rest that barely on my arrow rest.
Uh-huh.
And I see where that string is, and it'll have a measurement on your string or on the bow square, and you go up to 5/8 of an inch above the rest. That's what your bow square is going to show. And I would knock something right there. That's where I would start right at 5/8. That's just like the typical range. Like, you might not have to move it after that. Mine's like 11/16. So mine's only like 1/16 of an inch higher than that. So,
same concept as center shot for a compound. Like, there's just bows are made to be in a certain range. And like, I think it's 13/16 or 7/8, depending on the bow manufacturer, but recurves are knocking point about 5/8 of an inch up.
Yep. And that's general. If you're 3 under, you might end up being a little higher. I don't know why that happens. I don't know. But
that's what we were talking about earlier. There's a difference sometimes between the split finger and 3 under. So
3 under tends to be high.
So brace height is good. Arrow is knocking point is recommendation where the manufacturers typically like to be. Now you're ready to shoot your continue to use your bow, which is a 4-inch spine arrow. And is this arrow full length when you start?
So that is something too where you can. So this is all personal preference. When you order your first dozen arrows, realize that you're probably going to waste a few as far as cutting and trying to figure it out. But you might not.
Yeah.
You don't need to cut your trad arrows at all. You don't. There's no reason. There's really not any reason other than the fact that you want to add more weight up front and have a heavier arrow. So potentially, you might want to cut it. So I think I cut maybe 1.5 inches off of mine before I got it to where I want it.
You're talking, I got this tunable kit, right? This different spine arrows. They come full length, right?
Yep.
And then you can just screw on like your Like, you do you have like a recommended, like, hey, insert 125 grain, shoot these spines, or do you, like, I guess that's like how I always try to, like, that's the part I'm at. Like, do I just start full length arrows and say, I want to shoot 125 grain head and I want to have for you, you know, you have 50 plus the insert, right? So it's like, do I just want to have that, you know, like a general rule of thumb, like 200 grains up front and then cut my arrow or find the right spine? Like, I guess that's where I'm kind of, this is where the water's a little murky for me, because I think it's a little different than how you would achieve the same thing with a compound.
Yeah, and this is the hardest part, honestly, by far, when you first start out, is the figuring out how to tune the arrow. So when you first start shooting, you're not always going to shoot how you will in a year.
Yes.
It's going to be a little bit of difference. However, it's not going to be dramatically different, I don't think, unless it does change your max.
Unless you really suck. You really suck at first, and you get a lot better.
Yeah, but say your draw length is within, you know, reason, like a quarter inch, half inch, you know, not dramatically different, maybe even an inch. Like, yeah, you might need to mess with a bit, but once again, that's where I said it gets more expensive. You end up tossing out some arrows.
Yeah.
So, but no, so say you got your draw length down and all that stuff. We're consistent. Basically, what I would do is I'd keep that full length arrow and I'd slap basically whatever you want. You could slap a factory insert into that and then have a field point test kit. You can buy them for like $9 and it'll range from like 125 to 300 grains or something in that range, or 200, 300, something like that. So what I would do is I wouldn't even worry about the insert weight. I would just mess with your tune with the heavy field points, because it'll react the same as if you had a heavy insert.
Same dynamic. Yep. Makes sense. I did the same thing. That's sweet. Okay.
Yep. So that's what I do. I mess with the new bow. I just have a field point test kit, whatever. So I would shoot a full length arrow. Okay. So we're going to do a hypothetical, you know, thing here. Just whatever. So basically, I'd have the insert in, and you could either hot melt it, or you can super glue it with archery super glue. And normal super glue, maybe that works. I haven't used that. I just use an archery super glue.
Yep.
So I would just do that. Go ahead and do that factory insert, and I'd slap on. What I would probably do is I would slap on the heaviest point right off the bat with your arrow, or the least heaviest. Yep. So now what you do. Is now we're ready to shoot. So you got that knocking point set, all that stuff. So yeah, now you shoot your bow. Okay, you get your grip set, you pull back. What you want to do though, when your bear shaft tuning to start, is typically you want to have your bow straight up. You don't want to cant your bow too much when you're shooting. It makes the bear shaft tuning a little easier with the charge and stuff. So you have a pretty vertical bow. Doesn't need to be perfect. And pull back, you release. Okay, you see your arrow. And this is where it gets a little tricky at first. But say you are knock left. Your knock's way high. Your knock's left when you shoot it.
Yep.
So typically that's going to mean unless it's super far off. Typically, that's going to mean you're weak.
Yeah. So, and are you shooting this through paper or just how it's stuck in the target?
Nope, just stuck in the target. I might paper tune, but in reality, your bear shaft's probably not going to be like perfect unless you're cutting down like tiny increment.
Yeah, like reach shot. Like you got to be.
You're just perfect. Yeah, and your release is going to change it. You know, so you're just looking for a consistent, you know.
And is this result. Like 5 yards? Like, how far are you shooting into a target?
Yeah, typically I'd shoot right at 10 yards right off the bat. That's where I would go. Just see, maybe if it's not terrible, I'd step back to, you know, 15, 20, just let one launch.
Yep. But for newbies, 5 or 10 yards is great. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's dramatic. Exactly. Like, it's like when he's talking about that knocking point is not going to be like your knock is not going to be behind where the arrow is stuck into the target, because that arrow is going to be, if it's not tuned right, it is going to be just wobbling through the air. And then, so, okay, so let's say you got the point, like you just said, you're underspined or you're, so the arrow's flexing way too much, then you would have to go to a different spined arrow with that point weight you have. Or if you're extreme point weight, you could take point weight down to make the dynamic of the arrow be less underspined.
Yep, exactly. So now, say we're shooting high knock left. So if our knock is high, we want to bring our knocking point down. So, however, I don't like to mess with that until I get a little more familiar with the arrow point weight. Just because when you have more weight up front on your arrow to start, your knocking point's going to need to be lower. So I wouldn't worry about that to start. So say now we jump down to a 200 grain field point. I'm just saying we tested everything out. Jump down to a 200 grain field point, and it shoots slightly, very slightly knock left, but it's high, okay? Knock super high. That's when we're like, okay, we're remotely close now. I'm going to adjust my knock. So what I would do if I'm knock high, I'm going to lower my knock. And you could do it substantially. I mean, it's kind of up to you how much you want to weight, but I would just drop it down maybe like an eighth of an inch. So say it's 4/8 of an inch now or half inch. That's what I would have to knock height at.
Gotcha.
And then just see how that goes. So you're kind of just finessing it for a while.
And one, you know, trying to find
that sweet spot.
Are these arrows are not fletched, or are they fletched when you're doing this?
This is a bear shaft. These are unfletched.
Yeah, unfletched. Yep. So sweet. And if I've had another discussion. It's like, well, I don't know if I'm so new. I don't know if I want to necessarily dive into shooting bear shafts. That's okay. You can bear shaft tune after you've shot your bow a lot. Like, you know, you kind of gave a general rule of thumb, like, hey, get some, if you're shooting a 40-ish pound bow, 500 spine arrow, you know, you can have your normal weight. You can go get familiar with shooting the bow, and maybe your arrows aren't flying perfect, but at least you're understanding, you're building the muscle. Then when you get a little bit like, okay, I think I'm ready for this, fletchings come off pretty easy. You can, or you can buy that kit separate and then, you know, or buy a couple different things. Like there's a lot of ways to skin the cat here. You don't have to do this right away. But if you want to get like that, this is the point I'm at where I'm realizing that my arrows are not set up perfectly for my bow. Cause like I understand arrow flight and I could see it, which before I never had the experience to even realize what was going on. But this is where I'm like, okay, this is the next step of my progression in traditional archery, is like getting the right arrow dynamic with my bow.
That's so,
but yeah, it can be intimidating, but it's worth it. It makes all the difference.
Yep. And then once you get it, you're good. So
yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So that's
recommendation, like what I'm going to do from listening to what you had to say, is when I get my bow, I'm going to order some, because I'm going to be a 40-ish pound bow. I'm going to just order, you know, half a dozen or a dozen 500 spine arrows, full length. If they come fletch, cool. I'll just throw points on there, and I've shot enough that, or if I want to get familiar with the bow, I might just shoot close range for a few weeks or whatever it may be. And then when it's like, okay, I feel good with this bow, that's when I'll probably order the test kit of field point weights. I will, you know, strip a fletching off an arrow, and I will start shooting that thing at 10 yards, and then I'll know. It's like, oh, okay, time to fine tune. Like, here we go. And I think that, that's a pretty realistic approach for a lot of guys.
Yes. I mean, there's no one way to go about it. I'm just, you know, basically trying to give guys an idea of, hey, maybe try this out, you know, and
yeah, I think it's better to just laugh because all the arrows I have in my basement for my compounds right now, I got bear shafts this long, I got bear shafts this short, I got this weight arrow, I got this ouser, I got this wrap, I got, oh gosh, like I have just over the years just went down so many rabbit holes. This is the exact same kind of a thing, but it doesn't have to be. It just comes down to what you want out of it, and you can go as crazy. But I think, like you said, the brace height, the knocking point, like get especially if you're buying a used bow, check those things and start off at least on the right groundwork, so you're not like fresh, like Robert, like I said, he'd been shooting his bow all last year, and then he got a new string, and he's like, dude, this thing's shooting just like, I don't know what's going on. And it was a simple thing of just adjusting his prey sight. He, like, matter of a few twists, he got it where he needed to be, and it was like, he sent me some pictures of the groups he was shooting right after, and I was like, yeah, dude, that little bit makes all the difference. Just having, it's just like having a compound that's not synced up. Like, if your cams aren't shooting, you know, hitting right, your arrows are going to be, your arrow flight's going to be terrible.
So. And so one thing I also want to add is checking your tiller after you're done messing with your string. So your tiller. So a lot of guys will mess with their string to get their brace height where they want to be, but then they get it set and they're like, oh, my brace height's good. Well, you got to check your tiller. And your tiller is when you take your bow square and you measure from your string to where I just measure from where, like, the riser and your limb kind of meet. Just pick two spots on your bow up top where the limb and the riser meet, and make sure those distances are similar.
Oh.
Well, for split finger, the three under, I don't know enough of that. I just try and keep mine similar. And to be honest, I could maybe be doing it slightly wrong. Like, maybe I should have one slightly over the other. Well, I think that's for three under, but that's something I need to look a little more into, but I've just gotten away with keeping those even.
So you're saying split the bow in half and pick 2 points, and you're saying where my limb meets my riser on each half and make sure that distance is the same to the string on both those.
Close enough. Yeah, it's pretty close.
So what happens if they're way off? What does that mean? You got too many twists in one half of your string or something? Okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. Because that's what you were saying. When you do put twists, make sure you do each side of the serving. So you're not over twisting. Gotcha. Okay. Hey, I just learned that. I'd never have heard that before. So that's cool.
So and to be honest, if you twist the top half, you might be okay. You just gotta figure it out. Cause my string, when I twist it, I kind of don't twist the bottom half as much when I'm twisting the top, and it ends up being about the same. You got to mess with it, but that's basically what I wanted to make sure is check the tiller and the brace height.
That's great. So, that's great, dude. Like, that's why I like talking to guys and doing podcasts, because, like, I learn stuff all the time, and I already have, like, this mental, like, list in my head that when I get home, I'm going to write down, or I'm going to make you text some of the stuff to me that you've been down. But, like, I've learned a lot, like, in, like, literally real-world stuff. Like, I've been going through some of the stuff some buddies, and it's like, man, I know I've done this in the past, because there used to be this old boy. He had a traditional archery shop at Sand Lake, Michigan, and then they ended up moving a little farther south off of like M57, and that was where me and my father always went to get trad stuff. And the bow I bought, the current recurve I have, he set it up for me. He had the arrow, he built the arrows for me, did all that stuff, and he was the first person, now that I remember this, he's the first person that talked to me about brace height. Because I went in one day and said, man, my groups are just terrible. I mean, I was shooting really good, and I don't know what happened. He's like, oh, check your brace height. And sure enough, it was off, because just from de-stringing it too much or whatever it may be, I can't remember why, it was off, and I fixed it. And I was like, oh, we're back. Like, we are back. But those, I still have those same arrows that from when he did it. So I never even set those up myself. So I'm kind of excited to just kind of learn that. And that reminds me, how long can I keep my recurve strung for?
Yeah. Well, hey, yeah.
You're responsible. Whatever you say, we're going to do.
No, honestly, I always unstring mine, to be honest.
Okay.
Black Widow, they're like the... So, Black Widow and Stalker, those are like the Matthews of the trad world.
Yes.
That's like my opinion, like, and what I've kind of seen. Like, those are like, when you go to the trad events, like, those are the booths that are like filled up. Like, and they have tons of bows. And, But anyway, Black Widow claims that you can keep it strong, I believe.
Okay.
So, I still would unstring them. I just like to. I don't know. Just, but it might be an old school thing. But yeah, on the older bows, though, I would definitely unstring them on most bows. You're not going to hurt it. You unstring it.
Oh, so. Hell no. No. That, like you said, that D-stringer, is that what you call it when you like stand on it and you could pull your, it's so nice to, stringer take on and off. It's, I have one of those and it's like, ooh, this is awesome. Super easy. Okay. So is there anything else like, you know, kind of things that you've learned that I think is pretty important with like getting, you know, started out with it, from like a setup perspective?
From a setup perspective, I would say, another thing is when you first get your bow, I would recommend getting a quiver if you're going to hunt with the quiver. And some guys don't even hunt with the quiver on. They take it off right when they get in the tree. I got burned on that, last year because I had a bow, not last year, but season before, because I used to take the quiver off my bow and it wouldn't tune well with the quiver on the bow. So I always had to do that. Well, I had a buck on the ground at 15 yards that I didn't shoot at because I was trying to take my quiver off. And by the time I took my quiver off, that buck was gone. So,
I shoot my quiver out, my recurve, my compound and recurve. Like that bugger stays on for a reason. That's what I tell myself.
So if you have in your head, like, I'm going to have the quiver on or off, I would tune with it on or off.
Okay.
And then shoot it with it on or off, whatever other way you choose, and just see if it too is the same. It wouldn't hurt. Because sometimes they do. But there's a chance that they won't tune the same when your quiver's on there.
Gotcha. So. Gotcha. Well, that's some like really good stuff. I know we could have went really far down a rabbit hole. And I think, when I start doing, I definitely want to have another conversation with you to kind of go through some of that stuff, but I kind of want to transition this conversation a little bit to end it out on some hunting stuff. You kind of led us into that a little bit anyways. But what, when you're talking about, you know, this is something you've been doing for like a handful of years and your dad's been doing it, a couple of things that I feel like that jump off to me is like, what's your range? Like, are you killing deer 20 yards and in, 25 yards and in? Like, what's something that you're like, I know you've shot a lot. So like where are realistically is your kill zone or kill radius, I guess, with traditional equipment?
When I set up in the woods, ideally it's going to be any shot within 15, but I know that doesn't always happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I am okay with, you know, 20 yards. I shot a 2.5-year-old buck up here, first weekend of, archery season. And that one was a little further than I wanted. That was probably around 23. It felt like 20, but
yep.
So it just happened. And, I mean, I shot a doe this year too at 4.5 yards, 10 feet up in the tree. So
love it.
Yeah. So honestly, just 25. I wouldn't feel comfortable. I actually didn't shoot at the biggest buck of my life, this year. It was at 25, 30 yards.
Oh man, I was gonna ask you that. Like, what happened? Like,
Matt,
are you good? How do you feel about that? Because I'd be like, oh, if I had my compound, I could have shot him. But you're bow out, so
you're selling.
You go to a compound.
Yeah. So one of my buddies, he made a comment. He shoots crossbow, and he made a comment to me. You know, when I first started, like, what are you going to do with that big buck's at 30 yards and you can't shoot it? And I said, you know, honestly, I don't really care. Well, I had that one at 25, 30, and I was like, this is tough. So I wouldn't say I wanted my compound, but I'm like, you know what? That's all right. It's a deer. I mean, it's all meat at the end of the day.
So. Yes. And you're out there having fun, right? You're hunting your hunt.
Yep.
You're hunting your house.
Exactly.
That's where I gotta get I think a lot of guys face that same thing, like who are compound guys that dabble with both. And what I did last year, I kind of liked what I did last year. Like I had recurve properties. So it's like, if I'm going to hunt here at all this year, it's, you know, the struggle sticks come along. If I, you know, no wheel bow, no training wheels on this property. And I think I might do that again this year. I kind of liked it. So it made those hunts really fun. And then, you know, I think then it's also, to be honest, those were the properties where I didn't have a giant. So it was like, whatever, you know, kind of came by. It was like, you know, maybe one could walk by, but I'm not, you know, like I had that really big deer I was hunting last year. Like these properties were nowhere near that. So, that was kind of fun. I think it kind of can, you know, see where it involves and, for me, but when you, so the next question, I think a lot of guys are going to be thinking, it's like, okay, my kill zone is 20 and in, and you're saying 20 and in, and you have a lot of experience. So like for me, I probably should realistically be more like 15 or 12 ish yards is kind of my in kind of area. How has there been a learning curve with your setups? Because you do a lot of public land hunting, hanging hunts, all that stuff. I've seen your setup. Are you sliding to these areas and you find the sign, you do all the things we've heard a lot of guys talk about mobile hunting. Are you able to, is there anything you've learned that's like, okay, this is kind of the sweet spot. Like I gotta look for this, or this is the kind of terrain feature I like to be. So those deer, like you said, you shot one at 4.5 yards. So is there something that you like? Like, I guess for you, it's like, okay, this is my setup right here. This is what I like. Like I'm excited. Like every time you're putting that, every stick you put on a tree, you're just giddy. Because you're like, oh man, this is gonna be in my zone. I love it.
Yeah, honestly, hunting up here, it really varies. You have your swamps, you have your oaks and ridges and your cuts, but I don't really have an exact type of woods that I hunt all the time. It's more of where are the deer are gonna be when it's dark. So if they're going to be in this area where a lot of these hunters are and they're hunting, where are they going to be, you know, half an hour before that in the daylight? That's, yeah. I know it sounds kind of.
Dude, I love that. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So that's a lot of it. I mean, so honestly, if you're going to talk about like what it would be, it'd probably be bedding to food is my typical thing. I mean, I will hunt food, but that's kind of been the way I go.
Yep. And then now, are you prioritizing cover in a tree over anything else, or what is, because I'm just thinking in my head, like the couple setups I did last year, the one was a tree that I was, you know, low to the ground, probably 8 feet up. It was a tree that made sense because I had great cover and I was able to get a shot off. And then the second shot I got off, the tree had a little bit less cover, but I was, you know, it just made sense because of a terrain feature I was by. So I had an advantage from being able to see them before they saw me, kind of a thing. Have you found yourself, because I know you've hunted some big woods, like sometimes it's tough to find a tree with cover. Like what's your thought process there when you like get on a ridge or get somewhere? It's like, I got to shoot a deer at 15 yards in this area. Or are you like really just honed in on like the really thick areas? So it kind of helps you a little bit.
Just wear gray pants and a flannel and you're good.
Oh, I love it.
There you go.
Easy as that. Bada boom, bada bing.
Yep. Great pants and a flannel. So no, but that. In all seriousness, I mean, I try and hunt a lot of trees that aren't super climbable. I mean, honestly, it really just depends on where the area is. It's gotta jump out in your head when you're scouting. Preseason or during the season, you know what trees are going to be something you're going to get picked out in and ones that aren't. So
there's an art to it though, right? Wouldn't you say? Like there's an art to picking a tree to get up in and, you know, have a successful sit. And that means deer come by you and you don't get picked off. Like that's like I'm winning when that happens.
Yeah. And a lot of it too is just thinking about the wind. I mean, where's your scent going to end up going when I'm sitting in this tree? That That's a huge thing. Or when these deer are walking through this area, what are they going to be paying attention to? Are they going to be paying attention to, you know, what's up ahead? Or, you know, are they going to be eating? It's kind of, yeah, I don't know. I'm not too good on too great on talking about how to hunt, but I kind of just go by whatever looks good or feels good at the time.
So. Yep. Well, I think it's one of those things that you've just been doing it this way for a while, so you probably don't even really think about it. You know, it's like a feeling, right? Like you roll into an area and it's like, yep, that's where I got to be. Boom, right there. And we fail a lot more than we succeed, but you know, it still works out occasionally.
Yep.
So, yep. All right. So let's kind of end this on a couple things. What are you doing right now? I mean, I know you got a backup string. Have you, like, did you do some spring scouting, or are you just like really focused on just getting reps in the bow? Are you looking forward to anything this summer? Kind of like lead us to the current events here for you.
Yeah. So I got into a little bit of a rabbit hole of steelhead fishing this year.
Oh, cool.
So I didn't shoot my bow for the longest period in the last 3 years is like maybe 2.5 weeks. I didn't even pick up the bow. So that was a big deal. So, but now I've transitioned out of steelhead. So now I'm, shooting the bow again. So, but yeah, this summer, I'm just going to try and go to a lot of the shoots, traditional shoots. There's, Compton's, so that was something too about buying a bow. Someone's wanting to look, if they want to buy a bow soon, you can go to the Compton shoot in Berrien Springs, and they have a lot of used bows, and you can just go shoot any of them that you want. And that's June. Oh, you can look it up online, but it's either June 12th or 18th. It's coming up. It'll be here in the
fall. Nice. Yeah, and I'm going to say that too. Like, dude, you go to one of those used bow, they have a shooting spot, and you literally take that bow and a couple arrows, and they let you go shoot it. Like, you go shoot it in the designated shooting spot, and you bring it back and you go try another one. Like, it's a pretty cool experience to go do that.
Yep. Nope. And that's a great way to get started.
Sweet, dude.
And, I'm going to TAC though, with some friends. I'm excited about that. I'm going to the Boyne one.
Ooh. So what day? Because I'll be there.
I'll be there the whole weekend.
Sweet, dude. We'll touch base. I'll be there too.
Yeah, nice. That'll be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's the first time I've ever been to one to shoot. I saw some, I walked around the vendors and stuff last year with Little Man, but yeah, I'm excited to go fling some arrows throughout the hills over there. And probably break some and lose some, but it'll be fun for that. Did you draw or apply for any out of state tags this year?
Yeah, so that's what I was getting into next. I'll be doing some shoots, you know, summer stuff. And then also in a Northwoods one, it's at the end of June. They have a money shoot here in Grayling. The total prize for the bow hunter class was $1,000 last year.
Wow.
So if anyone's looking to try and, you know, get some money out of it, we have a good shoot. So yeah, that'll be here in June. Then, after that though, so I just recently applied for my 11th point for bear at the Red Oak unit. I actually am trying to get the tag this year. So I've heard that I should be you know, pulling this year. So I'm hoping this September I have a bear hunt here in Michigan.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And is that going to be, are you going to do bait? Or are you going to do dogs, or what do you want to do for that?
Yeah, I'm gonna send it with the bait and the recurve. So
nice.
I'm gonna try and test my luck at that.
Sweet, dude, that'll be a cool thing. Hopefully you get that. Selfishly, hopefully you get that so I can see how that goes for you. So I think that'll be fun, dude. Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Well,
dude, I am slightly jealous that you get to do all those shoots. I get to do one, so I'll go. It's going to be a big one, but I'll actually, you know what? I I will shoot my bow. I'm doing a traveling 3D league again this year. So that was a lot of fun. I did that last year. My golf games went way down because I was like, I want to shoot my bow instead, which is fine. And that I'm going to do that with a buddy or two. So that'll be fun. But between my, shoots, once a week, just, for an evening, I'll do that. Then tack. That's pretty much my shoots for the summer. So, but dude, it's, if you think about it, like, it's going to be here quick, man. Like it's, we're on the home stretch, get over the hump to back into archery season. So, it'll be cool. All right, dude. Well, my truck is dinging at me. I got to get some def in this thing because it's stupid truck that needs def. But, yeah, man, is there anything else you want to end this on? Anything?
I guess just some final words on the trail. Just enjoy it. Don't beat yourself up. That's something you're doing to have fun. So at the end of the day, you're just shooting your bow. So
love it.
Don't put the pressure on yourself.
Love it. Love it. You have fun. That's I get behind that. So, well, dude, I appreciate it. And this will probably be one of many conversations we have over the next couple months, because the more I get into it, the more questions I'm going to have. And who knows how many of those will grace the airwaves of Michigan Wild, but, we'll be talking. Yeah. It'll be good. And if anyone else has any, questions, I know you're not much of a social media guy, but do you have Facebook or anything?
Yeah, I have Facebook.
Okay. So we'll come up on Facebook.
I was going to say, if anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to help them out.
Yeah, perfect. All right, guys. You heard what the guy said, what Grant had to say here. Have fun. Don't need to have this crazy pressures. Go out there, fling some arrows. There is some systems in place that you can, you can take advantage of from getting, your bow set up properly. And you can dive into the rabbit hole as much as you want. But just have fun. Do that. And you know what to do, guys. Get out there. Thank you.
Thanks, Grant.
Thanks, Nate.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.